to two. Okay, I'm very glad to be here and grateful for the invitation where I meet so many good friends. Okay, I will talk about a subject that was motivated by an experiment done in the group of Mike Church at Georgia Tech, and Jeff Rogers was the guy who did really the experiments, and we have a lot of intense collaborations, and we hope, because Jeff is now working at Malibu, we will hope that we get the final version of our report finished here. Okay, I will talk shaking preliminary cells, type and starts. What it is turbulent convection with a temporal modulation of buoyancy. And we will see there are new types of resonances, four-mode resonances, which are quite unusual. Then I will briefly touch relaxation oscillations and more to qubits from the street. We looked at the problem of horizontally shaking Willebrand cell. Okay, what does it really mean? Okay, you see, this is a standard Willebrand cell, and the experiments are made with a gas, so maybe there's some pointer. We are interested in systems where the lateral dimensions are very large. That means large compared to the thickness of these convection cells, and there's a fluid layer, you apply a temperature gradient, then convection sets in if this temperature is above a critical temperature difference. We have the buoyancy, we have the gravity which goes in this direction that drives the convection. We have, okay, then there is a wavelength involved in these rolls and a Q vector which is like this. And now in addition, there is a vertical oscillation applied to the cell. That means we shake it just up and down. But unlike the Faraday system, the whole cell is closed. That is, nothing has to do with the surface, the closed cell. Standard cell you could see in Günther Ahle's lab. Okay, the thickness is maybe half a millimeter. Characteristic times are 1.5 seconds. And in addition, another time comes in by the shaking frequency, which is of the order maybe of 10 hertz. The delta here is of the order of 1 centimeter, so that is what you do. Then the system is described at first by two non-dimensional parameters. There is a Rayleigh number, which apart from some material constant contains this temperature difference and the thickness. And there's another quantity, the Prandtl number, which contains the kinematic viscosity and the thermal diffusivity. That is of the order one. And if you impose these oscillations and you go in the co-moving frame, that leads to a modification of the gravity constant. It gets an additional oscillating term. And this is a kind of, that is just a reduced acceleration, omega squared times delta, and we took the g out. We call this always epsilon g. And here we have the frequency. And so, the torque, you would see this renormalized acceleration, or sometimes you would see the delta, the amplitude of the oscillation. Okay.
Delta prime has a G?
Delta prime has no dimension.
Okay, and it's not clear if you define omega prime and delta prime together.
No, the dimension is just hidden in the so-called Fraud number. Originally, it is omega squared delta times g, and if I make it dimensionless, in units of this inverse of this time.
Omega prime is dimensionless.
Omega prime is dimensionless.
In delta units of TV.
Yes, delta in units of d, in units of the thickness.
And delta.
The temperature. The delta is the amplitude of the shaking.
So it's a length.
It's a length.
And it's made non-dimensional with what length?
With the thickness of the layer.
So it's very large.
It is very large. It is 1 centimeter. It's 20 times. This is the maximal.
Yeah, that was my question. Okay. Delta prime is a very large number.
Very large number. And this additional acceleration that you get here, this number can easily get into the order of 5. That means the oscillating component of the gravity is 5 times larger than the natural gravity. You see, we have here just g, we take it out. This omega squared delta is just acceleration, and we divide it by g, so this thing is dimensionless. And this is of the order of 5.
I don't understand, because omega prime is also large compared to 1.
Yeah, here I did not, it was not taken out dimension. Here I have kept all dimensions in this term.
One plus,
but the whole thing has no dimension.
Right.
Okay, and this is...
He said it was 10 hertz.
Yeah.
Which is...
10 hertz.
Large, which is,
yeah, 10.
60.
Yeah, it is 6 in omega, yeah.
And it's 60 squared, and delta prime is 20. So how can 60...
Delta is 1.
And then you divide by 10 in these units, and then you get an thing of the order of 5.
Square is about 60 squared, right?
Yeah.
And then delta is 1.
No, delta is 20. Delta prime is 20. So how do you get 60 squared times 20 is equal to 6?
Omega prime is also fairly large.
Also very large, and the delta is small, and you divide by a 10. Okay, we can figure this out. We have,
I think there's a mistake.
Doubt a little bit. Oh. Anyhow.
More interesting, the fact that you simply cannot achieve large modulations in classical fluids with delta is about 3 millimeters instead of 6 tenths of a millimeter.
Yeah.
And the vertical diffusion times are long.
Yeah,
so it's only through gas convection that you have any hope at all.
And you said that dimensionless coefficient in front of 1 plus is about 6?
Yeah, it goes up to 6. Okay, then you see what we always show, the patterns we show just is the upper vision, so the upper part of the cell. That means the convection cell then leads to some picture that we would observe by the standard shadow graph method. So all the pictures we show are two-dimensional pictures that map the convection system. Okay, what we have to solve is nothing else than the Boussinesq equations in this co-moving frame. Okay, these are the standard Boussinesq equations. This is Navier-Stokes equation. It contains the buoyancy term. We have a temperature equation. This is not unchanged. This is not changed by the oscillation. And here we have this additional term. And nothing else has been changed. That means we have a parametrically excited system in some sense. Okay. And then we solve these equations by several methods. First, we have to find the onset of convection. Then we apply the so-called Galerkin method. We look for periodic solutions in space of these equations, maybe with periodic boundary conditions, look for their stability, and so on and so on. And then the results are backed up by direct simulations of these equations. We solve them just by brute force. And in the Faraday system, people have difficulty to achieve these steps here, because the Faraday system is, in some sense, more complicated, because the boundary of the dish plays an important role, and so on and so on. Our system is an isotropic system, and it is remarkable, or maybe it is almost clear, that the so-called Boussinesq symmetry is not broken. It has a symmetry. You can just reflect around the midplane, z to minus z. So hexagons are excluded in these equations if you are in the Boussinesq regime. Now, just few words to the technical aspects or one can write the Poisson-Less equations in a kind of symbolic form. V is just a vector, a kind of vector, a symbolic vector that has the velocity field and the temperature field here. We have a quadratic non-linearity. We have a linear operator which contains the control parameter and the frequency. And then we have on the other side the time dependence. Then we first solve the linear problem. We look for the eigenvalues here. We look for the largest one. And then we just look at the point where the real part of the largest eigenvalue passes zero. And this gives us the wavelength, the wave number or wave vector, and the critical RC at which convection starts at first. Okay, this is, in this case, it is a little bit tricky because it involves also a floquet answer in time. We have a periodic driving, so all the fields with respect to time have to be expanded in series with respect to this frequency. And then there are two cases, the so-called harmonic or subharmonic case. If this S is zero, then it follows directly the external driving frequency. But, and that is typically the Faraday system, it can also be that the frequency is just half the external frequency, the frequency expressed in the system, and that we call a subharmonic solution. It is just nothing else than a period doubling in time. And these are the two typical situations. And then one goes on, one calculates a so-called amplitude equation, and that allows us to see whether the bifurcation is supercritical, whether it starts continuously if we pass this critical R. And then we do Galerkin, and then we have to all to use these expansions, and on top of it, we have also to be in expansions with to the Q and its higher harmonics. And then we have our own pseudo-spectral code, which makes heavily use of fast Fourier transformations. And it was kindly brushed by Larion, and so it got really very fast. Okay.
Linearized problem? No,
we plug in the full equation, we plug the Floquet ansatz in, and then we have 500 coefficients, and then we have to solve for them, and so on and so on. Okay. Early in the 70s, people have got already a quite nice insight in that problem by mapping these equations to so-called Bathieu equations. That means these are equations with just a damped pendulum. And it contains also this modulation of the gravity. And if you look how this is made, there are two cases. If you heat from below, then you have a case that you have a pendulum that sits on your fingertip, but it is just damped. And so just by oscillating it, you keep it off from falling to the side. That is the standard situation in the Relevenard case. And so oscillation just retards maybe the onset of convection. It comes later. The other case is if you heat from above, then you have this pendulum, and then you have kind of resonances. That means even if you heat from above and you shake it, you are able to excite a convection pattern. These are the two cases, and this has been figured out already by Gresciusani in a very, very nice paper. Okay, the main point is, if you go to these analyses, we get the critical Rayleigh number and the critical wave vector. And this is maybe the very important issue for this talk. Okay, let us. Here we have a fixed frequency, and here we plot, and here we have the amplitude of the oscillation. And 1 means 0.35 centimeters. And that corresponds to epsilon d 0.9. Okay. Now, R is the applied temperature difference in dimensionless units, and below these two curves, we have no convection. And then we increase the applied temperature difference, we pass this line, and above, we get convection. And that happens also here. And there are two cases. If we do it at a small delta, and that is just a situation considered in the experiment, the convection pattern follows a little bit modulated the external frequency. That is the harmonic case. If you do it here, it is a subharmonic case. It follows with half the frequency. And there's a codimension 2 point where these two curves cross. And here we expect interesting scenarios where harmonic and subharmonic modes just coexist in some sense. And the interesting point is now that the wave vectors, that means the roles that excited here, have a Q that goes down with increasing delta. That means the roles are quite widely spaced in the harmonic case, whereas here on this branch, they have a big Q. That means they are narrowly spaced. Now the system has now given, okay, now the system knows about this and it sits here. And now it has to find a kind of compromise. It has got modes which are narrowly spaced and widely spaced. One has an isotropic system, so you can put the wave vector in any directions, and it has also to cope with the different frequencies. Okay, and this is now the situation I'm interested in, is just this one. Okay, what does one see at first if one is not in this codimension 2 region?
Both supercritical.
If one is not in this codimension 2 region, then one sees stripes that are quite familiar in the normal Rilby-Naf system. But sometimes the stripes can be a focus pattern. Sometimes one sees even hexagons, one sees spiral defect chaos. And these are the harmonic ones, and here you see the subharmonic ones in an experiment which are more narrowly spaced. And here you have already complicated mixed states, and you have not to do it with a square, with a round, with a circular cell. You can also take a square cell, it doesn't matter. Okay, these are the stripe pattern.
These are with modulation.
And I have not put the numbers here. All these patterns are with modulations. These are at small amplitude, and then it goes on. And these are at large amplitudes where the rows are narrowly spaced. So, and the stars, then we would see the stars when we come now to this region. The patterns you saw were either sitting here or there. And now we look at patterns what one would observe here. And okay, and these are the stars. See? And we had just paper with experimentalists. And here you see the stars. You would not see stripe patterns. Instead, the convection makes these little things, and we call them stars. That is now, okay, and we have to explain this, where it comes from. No, they follow more or less the frequency, the external frequency. You know? They are stationary in some sense, at least in simulation always. Okay, if you look at these star patterns, and that at first I show you the experiment. Okay, that is an experiment. And then you do a Fourier transformation of this pattern, you observe a very interesting trick that nature does. You see, in this region, it has the harmonic wave vectors, which are quite short, widely spaced roll, and it has the large Q vectors available, which corresponds to the narrow subharmonic rolls. And they can sit on an annulus, and what then nature did, it made a tricky kind of resonance. What it did is, you see, if you look at this pattern, it looks as if there were a backbone, a kind of square backbone on which the stars are sitting. And this square backbone is spanned by these two harmonic wave vectors, whereas the stars are made by these long subharmonic wave vectors, but they make a resonance. The difference of these two is always the difference of these two, and it does it in two directions. Also, the difference of these two is just like this. So this is a four-wave resonance. That means four waves of these two, and also the complex conjugates just conspire to make this pattern in a tricky way. Okay, where one would find these patterns? And now I took this region out. Here is the region where the harmonic and subharmonic curves would meet, and we see in this region we observe these patterns.
Are they crystalline or quasi?
Yeah, we come to this point. And our simulations were mainly done here, and these are these square patterns, and they bifurcate directly out here. Directly, if you go up on this point, you get this, and these are two simulations, and we have no difficulty to describe the experiments quantitatively, and just to show you that we can do this. This is an experiment where you come from you start at low shaking amplitude, and then you move into the direction of larger delta, and then you see here, you see already the larger Q coming into play. It is seeded at places where the amplitude is small, then it gets more, and at the end, you get this. That means you increase the delta, you sweep through this region. Okay, this is simulation, and this is the corresponding experiment. So we can just describe those experiments. Yeah?
Where do you cut the high modes in the simulation?
Oh, we cut them four times the Q. Okay, this is... That is a problem, no? Because we have this large, as you already see. Okay. And maybe this would be a good time to see what the simulation does. I show you just, I hope it works. Does it work? Oh no, that was the wrong one. No. What is this? No, I know. Okay, this is a simulation where you start in a big array, and then we did not continue this. That means I do it again. It starts from random initial conditions, and then we let the system run on the computer. No? And then it makes, obviously, these stars. That means it does this, but then it takes a very long time at the end to get rid of these grain boundaries. And we did not... then, if one does it with a smaller system, then the system has no problem to get to this state, and then the movie would go on. And we do it stroboscopically, we look at the patterns. And then we get these stars. And but we can also do it on a circular boundary conditions, and they seem to have played no role in this system.
Is the amplitude oscillates with the drive frequency?
The amplitude is given, and this is the drive frequency.
But the amplitude is time periodic.
Amplitude is time. It has in the harmonic part, it has a constant.
You look at it stroboscopically.
Yes, I look.
Because at times there is no
signal. No, no, no. Because in the harmonic, in the harmonic component, you see always a background pattern. Uh-huh. It has a time average, uh-huh. And so. No, if okay, and then one can also see other things, and so. Okay, this is an example where the frequency is much bigger. It is now 3 times bigger than maybe 30 hertz or so. And then you see also stars, but they got more of those spikes. I do not really understand how this happens, but just that has not been done in the experiment. But you see how they arrange. And then they sit there and would not move at all. The frequency?
There's only one.
It's only one frequency.
It's the Q
that are. The Q, sorry. That's now, that is the question. Yeah, that is a big question. Okay. Now, I would not like to show more. And then I go back to this. Oh, you stop. So, and maybe the main message that comes out of all this is the following. If you look at these patterns, and I told you already, the difference of these two vectors is always the difference of those, and the difference of these is the difference of those. That means we have that is written here, the difference of the harmonic ones is the difference of the subharmonic ones, and so on. And this comes also out in simulation. And this is a picture you already saw, and one has these. Always this difference. That means 4 modes are involved, and that is a very unusual case. Typically, one has resonances with 3 modes, hexagon type resonances. Then one can look what the system does if you. Okay, let us first describe, not in order to understand this, and it is quite hard, one has to. What we did is, for this situation, we derived coupled amplitude equations for these modes. And we have 6 coupled amplitude equations for the harmonic and the subharmonic ones, and they are coefficients. And here one has, here's a coupling between the A's, which are the harmonics, and the B, which are the subharmonic ones. And there are certain coefficients. And the system now, resonance means it chooses the phases of these amplitudes in such a way to make optimal use of these terms here. And in these amplitude equations, one gets a resonance, but we have 6 phases available, and 2 phases are not fixed in the amplitude equations. One needs higher order terms to lock them. Okay, that is a technical remark. Yeah, we have 6, we have 2 translational ones, then we have 2 with resonance, and then. And what we always can do is we can run our code and extract the amplitudes.
Okay, could you go back? There are only 2 wave vectors.
No, they are form.
How did you choose the wave vectors?
No.
Do the amplitude wave.
Oh, we took any, but maybe we took the critical ones, or we took the ones we see in the experiment. They are near the critical ones.
No? No, but that's my
question. For each set of cues, we can do this. No?
But how did you choose the cues?
No, we looked at an experiment, then we looked what is the cue this experiment would select. And then for those, just for fun, we did the amplitude equations. But we could do it for any other set too. But they have to observe this resonance. No? They always, the difference of these one has to be the difference of the other ones.
That could be satisfied.
Yeah, that's okay. That can be satisfied. We can take any Q vectors to set it, which are near the critical ones. And
you put that in.
I put this in the amplitude equation in. Then we can change it, and we get slightly different. But then we can run the code, and then we can extract just those modes that we put in into the amplitude equation. And then we see, okay, there is a harmonic mode, and there is a subharmonic one. And so we see that the amplitude equation works quite well. because a pattern is in some sense described by an amplitude equation. At least these modes and the amplitudes that you get here agree with the amplitude equation. But this is a technical aspect. But it is quite involved to do these calculations because you have always these Fouquet sums and so on. And then there are other, there are other cases. That is a case where we are very near to threshold, but on the harmonic side. And then the system has also makes use of these wave vectors, but does it in a different way. It puts the long ones here and the short one here. There's a different kind of resonance. And then you see these stripe patterns that have not been observed in experiment. But these can be described also by Galerkin methods. And then we checked our code looking at those things. And then if you would decrease the frequency by a factor of two, then the system in some sense loses these spikes. But we have still this resonance. The difference of those is just the difference of those. Okay, but this is more technical. And then if we would also further decrease the frequency, then we get in the experiment and in the simulation a different kind of pattern. Then the system makes only a resonance that the difference of these is just the difference of those. But on the other side, there is no square backbone. And that is a rhomboedric superlattice. We call it superlattice. And maybe this notion will appear several times in the talk. Superlattice is a lattice where in Fourier space you see that only few wave vectors pan the pattern. They have not to be commensurate. Just in Fourier space, things are simple. In position space, they are complicated. And you saw the structure in Fourier space is simple. And that is another example here for superlattice. This is in position space. And in Fourier space, we have just these short wave vectors and then the long ones. And this is a situation where omega is 300 or the frequency that is in dimensionless units. We see 30 hertz and we shake with 1.5 centimeters. And then the system makes a kind of double resonance. It takes this difference, it put it once here and one here. And that's what it does. It's not clear why it would do this. And now it comes to a question that was several times here already said. Are these quasi-periodic patterns Bravais lattices? That means, can they be spent?
Are they quasi-periodic?
No, these super lattices. No, that's the question. People call these patterns quasi-periodic sometimes if there are only few wave vectors are necessary to span them. So if you have a pattern in two dimensions and you see that five wave vectors or six build the main spots in Fourier space, then some people call it a quasi-periodic pattern, if they are not commensurate. Yeah?
I had noticed in your pictures, at least in the data, that not all the stars have the same number of arms. Is that where the quasi-periodicity comes in?
Although I have no good feeling, I have no good feeling how to map the structure in Fourier space to these stars. But in the simulations, starting from random initial conditions, then they are quite regular. And what we found is, now the question is, are these wave vectors we see there, are they commensurate? And if we have one, two basis wave vectors out of which we can span the whole Fourier space, then we call it really a superlattice. It's not a quasi-periodic thing. And this happens here, and so now one can look. We have all these wave vectors, the long, short ones and the long ones, and then we can set up some relations between them. We have the resonant conditions, that the difference of those is just the difference of those. Then we put in some vectors, And at the end, we find these patterns are really Bravais lattices if the wave number of the subharmonic wave number and the harmonic wave numbers fulfill just such a condition with some integers. So that is very easy. And then in this case, the Bravais lattice is spanned by 1 over n of the backbone which sits on a square. That means the basic wave vector is not the one you see on which the things sit, but it is smaller, by 1 over n. And this number can be 1, 2, 3, and we never found any bigger numbers than 3. So what it means is the system produces a pattern where where 4 stars or 9 stars build a subunit that is then repeated. It would not like to make really a quasi-periodic thing. It makes really a Bravais lattice. And this is the difference maybe to the Faraday system. The Q vectors can adjust. And so the system seems to like to make a Brillouin zone which is as small as possible, to say it in the language of solid state physics. Okay, and then we let it run, and then we look at the pattern, and then you see, and then you have to look very carefully. That means this is n equals 2. Maybe this unit is more or less repeated all over the system. And we have cases with n equals 3, and we have, and so on. Maybe this is a case with n equals 1, but I would not. I think this is a kind of interesting message. You know, the system is not fixed by the critical wave vectors, but it chooses in this band and adjusts the wave vectors in such a way that it makes these periodic beasts. And you see in simulation, it has got the chance to rotate the pattern. And so it finds always nice Q vectors that match into the underlying lattice.
So this is a kind of a locking.
It is a kind of a
thing that sort of starts out quasi-periodic and locks into a periodic.
In a periodic one, but with a period doubling or tripling in space.
So this is.
No, maybe it.
In the linear.
Okay, then. Okay, these patterns also you can. Then we did simulations and included this in an experiment. One sees hexagons and one can barely see maybe some stars. And then we put in the so-called non-Poissonnes effects into the equations. That means all these coefficients, viscosity, are made temperature dependent. And then we run the simulation and then we see not very clear kind of hexagonal pattern that is in Fourier space on which we see these short wavelength modulations as in the experiment. And so if you demodulate this, there's a backbone which is then more a hexagonal one, and all this here are the short wave vectors, or the long wave vectors. And I have no idea how to make the resonance in this case. And we have hexagonal resonance, 3-wave, 4-wave, and so on and so on.
But you can't.
I can just run the simulation
in Q space.
One sees this preference. No? This in Q space, it is.
But I mean the modulation of the hexagon.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
I can
see just the backbone pattern, and then here these are the short. The small Q, which makes the hexagonal background, and then the other ones are sitting almost isotropically around. Okay, this we have not studied this. You can also, as I told, one can also heat from above. And that is in principle clear. If you would shake the system with an effective gravitational constant that is much bigger than the natural one, the system does not care. about the original G. And so some people even, that is just fashionable in the literature, they look in the so-called microgravity case, that the G is very small, and then you can have a very large shaking, and then there are papers on that, but they never go, almost never go beyond the linear stability analysis, because then it gets... Okay, then one has also a harmonic and a subharmonic branch, one has two different wave vectors, but in this case, I don't know why, the harmonic wave vector is in this case bigger than the subharmonic one. And then it makes this kind of resonance, né, at the codimension 2 point. Now the harmonic wave vector sits here, and the subharmonic sits here. Né? And it makes, okay, this is then the picture that you see. Maybe this is just amusing, and the experiment has not been done. And it's a pity the apparatus would be there at Mike Schatz Institute, but it has been taken apart. No? And, No, it lines up in order that the wave vectors fit into the square lattice, which is a simulation underneath. No? So it makes a resonance, and so the system looks around to find a nice direction in space where it can just put the harmonic and the subharmonic one on lattice points.
On the grid of your simulation.
Yeah, the grid of some simulation. This is what it does. But surprisingly, one can also get patterns that they look very similar to those. If this epsilon g, that is the effective gravitational constant, is of the order of 1. Now you must imagine the heat from above, that the g is negative. You put some modulation on it of the same order. And so you have no idea how the system effectively can excite something. And then in this case, one comes near to the Faraday case. If one looks at the growth rates of mode, if you heat a Faraday system from above, okay, they are all negative. And here they are plotted. They are all negative because there is no convection. And then you increase maybe the temperature difference, the heating from above. And then the real part suddenly stop and would not change at all as a function of this negative R. You increase the temperature difference, and the real part does not change at a certain point. And then there comes an oscillatory bifurcation. And the oscillatory bifurcation, the imaginary part increases. What does it mean? The mode is a traveling wave. It has an e to the eqx minus the imaginary part, and it has an envelope that decays exponentially. And
in time.
And if this is then larger than this, then we have a wave that is not so strongly damped. And then the external frequency can lock in just into this internal frequency, and it makes the convection pattern. And this can be followed now in detail. One can just look at which Q, and then one gets here some maxima, and they correspond exactly to this resonance. No? There's a coupling to a weakly damped internal wave. So
this bottom thing is...
Okay, this is the growth rate
without
shaking. It's just without shaking. That means this is a standard Rele-Benard cell, and it has a traveling wave in it.
Oh, I see. And this is the effect of the shaking.
And that is the effect of shaking, and then you get a resonance between these two things. There's another issue that is also maybe quite interesting. That is the so-called relaxation oscillations. You see, in this system, you can have the following. We know that the system always tries to fight against the applied temperature gradient. It does it with the second order of the equations. But this process can sometimes overshoot. So as a function of time, sometimes the gradient is in the center of the cell in some sense would vanish. Typically we have such a gradient, then something is added so that in the middle we have no temperature gradient. Then convection stops, but there are some nuclei left, and then it starts again. And that one sees here. Maybe this is the external frequency. Here we see the Nusselt number, which is shown here and there. And this is one characteristic mode. And they go wildly around, they do these chaotic relaxation oscillations. And this was already described by Grescher and Zani. And the only simulation of these equations was this paper in Bieringen. And he looked at a system which has just two roles. Much too small to describe these. Now, okay, this is now the question is what happens if you do the same thing in a big cell? That means an hour, which is laterally extended. And then there comes some surprise. Okay, in a large system.
Where are you on the phase
diagram here? We are in the subharmonic range at a fairly large delta. Okay, the numbers are here. We are at R equals 10,000. And we are at epsilon G 20, but we have a different Prandtl number. This is just the parameters which people looked at the literature. Now, what you find now, the Nusselt number looks almost harmonic. Now, the system does a kind of self-averaging. Now, if you look at a snapshot of these patterns, you see the following. You see here is a short wave, a small q, and here's a large q. That is the Fourier transformation of this. And then we took 10,000 of those pictures that were, in some sense, not correlated and put them on top of each other. And then what was left over was this pattern here. And this has, just by putting them on top of each other, the short wavelength effects or parts of the pattern were just wiped out. And the superposition led just to this pattern, which has a scale which is given by this Q. And this seems not to change in time. And if you would calculate the Nusselt number of this pattern, it changes the time, but periodically. And if you would take the Nusselt number of this, then you get this periodic thing. So I think relaxation oscillations in large systems, where you have kind of self-averaging effects, might be totally different from relaxation oscillations in small systems, where you have only 1 or 2 degrees of freedom. Okay, to come to an end, then we looked, that is just to increase the parameter space. Now we take the cell and shake it in this direction. And so the equations do not change, but now we have the same thing, but it now goes in the x direction, whereas the buoyancy is still there. And here one can now, we did all cases, we did also shaking on a circle. We looked also at the case where you would put the cell upright, which is a slot, and shake it in this direction. And you get a wild, you get forward bifurcation, backward, harmonic, subharmonic, you get all kinds of things. This has not yet been finished. The point, if you do this, then you have a base flow. If you shake a cell, then you excite already a kind of big vortex. And on top of this, convection sets in. For small omega, we do not treat it as side walls. No, it is infinitely extended. That means, like an Eberhard inclined layer cell, somewhere this flow closes at the side, but this seems to play not an important role if the aspect ratio is large. So what we get here is a kind of mean flow, that has this typical cubic profile. That means the flow goes in this direction where it's cold, follows harmonically the external shaking, And then it is proportional to the Rayleigh number and proportional to the strength of the shaking, and that is also here. And now what we get, and that is the same situation as in the inclined layer, we get a competition between a Rayleigh-Binard instability and a shear flow instability. The system wants to fight against this shear flow, and this leads also to an instability. And there's both these instabilities then compete. Okay, these things are analytically known, very easy to calculate. And what we get then is, and I just show one parameter, we get then curves that look very similar to those which we saw before. We have one branch here with a small q vector, and one branch with a q vector which is almost constant. But in this case, the system does not show any subharmonic bifurcation. It remains in the harmonic branch, and we associate this one here, this is for a certain set of parameters, with a shear flow instability, and the other one is a Rayleigh-Binard instability. That means that here I plot the epsilon g, here's the Rayleigh-Binard case, and then it goes up. The shaking just blocks the convection at first, but then the shear flow instability sets in, and then you can even achieve convection at R which is larger than 2000. And this is just a simulation. I did a simulation somewhere in this regime, and then you get a kind of chaotic pattern where all these modes come together and make something interesting. Okay, maybe I could show you the last movie and then I stop. How this pattern then looks like, but it is just for fun. It is just this one. Now you see, then the two competing modes come into play and they make some kind of square pattern, but we have to investigate this. And the last one is maybe, no, go out here. This is, you can see how the system now makes this type pattern. It makes all the resonance in one direction. That is quite funny. How the
horizontal shaking?
No, this is the transversal one. That is the one which you can treat with Galerkin methods. That is always we like to look at these things. And and then if we see this, then we go to our Galerkin code and try to find it, or the other way around. But this is this situation where we have the long Q like this and the small one like this. That is a different kind of bifurcation. Okay, I think it is time I should stop here. Thank you for your attention. Yeah.
In this question of quasi-crystal versus...
Yeah, okay.
You might expect both the locking to get smaller near onset and the spread of the wave numbers get smaller near onset. So does the locking go away if you go...
If the wave numbers approaches other, that is what...
No, you approach the threshold, the opposite.
They approach the threshold.
Better defined.
No. Then, okay, then you have really, it goes away. No? We have not looked at this. We have never seen a quasi-crystal. I mean, we went very near to threshold, but then the simulations take almost forever. No? Problem here is one has to keep track of the timescale set by the frequency. And then we have an additional, the relaxation time, which goes to zero as a function of epsilon. So we did a little bit, but not. And in the experiments, the problem is, if they approach the threshold, the system becomes strongly non-Boussinesque, so they would see these hexagons. so they can also not do it. And so the experiment is always a little bit above threshold. No? And so we did, okay, that is, but I have the feeling that in these systems, the notion what should apply is a modulated, really Bravais lattice. No? That means the system locks into a kind of Bravais lattice, maybe with a period doubling, and then it, on top of this, it has some slight modulations. If it would, we saw never walls or such things, what you would see in a really commensurate-incommensurate transition. And this does also not depend on the boundaries. And this is different to the Faraday system, where by the frequency, the wave numbers are totally locked. And then the system has no choice to just change them. And it is, maybe it is not surprising, because here you have four wave vectors that make a resonance, that the patterns are more complicated. If you have only three, what you get in the Faraday system typically, that makes a resonance. That means the amplitude equation, we have square terms, and here we have typically no square terms. Okay.
Is there any general trend with Prandtl numbers when vertical shaping?
Yeah, yeah. There's a Prandtl number. You shift these. Oh, I have forgotten what it did. In principle, with increasing Prandtl number, you shift these codiment 2 points to larger epsilon or so. And but they do not exist experiments with water, for instance. And maybe according to Günther, they will never exist, because then shaking them is really very hard. And so this Prandtl number near one, but if you would do Prandtl number smaller than one, that also would be interesting. And Jeff Rogers' experiment was just on the way to look at these relaxation oscillations. He could do the frequency, he could all things, and then he finished his thesis. And I thought, I wrote to Mike, that would be an interesting thing to look at. No? But unfortunately, it has not been done. No? And also to go to larger frequencies, so one can do something. No? But also I have just to run the code and see but we have almost not looked at it. No? Only the relaxation oscillations, because Gresham and Zani picked just a big Prandtl number, so we took exactly their parameters, and they predicted the relaxation oscillations, but just for one mode, for one Q mode. No? And then if you take them together, it looks different. Okay. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the method you're using to expanding is.
Now this is one method. This is a Galerkin. Oh. This is a Galerkin method.
Okay.
So okay. Yeah.
Is
we expand.
Is there any advantage against just simply straightforward different scheme iterating it?
No. That we do also. No.
Oh, okay. So
No. But the difference is really if you do this, if you do really a Galerkin method, you know exactly what are the kind of modes that destabilize at a certain point your pattern. No? It is just a linear stability analysis of a nonlinear pattern. No?
The Galerkin method is not a simulation.
It is a Newton method.
Of the stability of well-defined
periodic
modes.
Oh,
and that's complementary.
It's complementary.
To the brute force simulation, which isn't theory, it's just numerical.
But what you would do is, we always check the Galerkin stability analysis. We put a pattern into the code, put a little bit of noise on it, and then we watch the pattern. And then one sees that those modes that really destabilize would pop out at first in the linear regime. And that you have to do in order to test your code. No? Otherwise, you are totally lost. No? And So we like that this works only if you do periodic boundary. If you have more complicated boundary conditions, then you cannot do Galerkin. But nevertheless, you get some insight, and so this is sometimes good to do so. But this is technically a little bit awkward, at least in this system. not so, but this gives you a sort of insight. You have to understand why you see this mode and why how does it happen. And that is a technical question. But the simulations are very valuable because we have often competing attractors. That means we find also in the Galerkin several states that are locally stable. And now comes the question, is the basin of attraction. In which state would the system really go? And that can only be tested by the code. And then you have all these problems maybe. Sometimes it takes 10 hours and the stars would move around, and then within 1 minute they make this locking into a state. So you get very, it looks really fantastic. They would never, you thought that it's not a periodic thing, and then suddenly they do it. And this is then very annoying and disappointing. You look there, you would not see anything, and then you say, okay, let's do another run. And then eventually it does it. And that is it is clear, this is just a resonance maybe. It takes a time to find the most find each other. Okay.
Yeah.